yesterday, yun, Buddhism, Gautam Buddha. So while discussing about Buddhism, we understood there are four kinds of Buddhism, and two kinds are put in one group, Vaibhashikas and Sautrantikas. Their basic fundamental problem was that they say that as soon as the effect is manifest, the cause is gone. Effect is manifest, and they give the example of the tree. As soon as the tree comes out of the seed is not there. So every cause gives rise to an effect. As soon as the effect comes, the cause is gone. So in this way, they have this theory of constant change. Constant change. And the constant change is in a circular fashion. One leads to the other, it goes another circle. So there are 12 points within their philosophy, which they mention that these are the 12 things, beginning with ignorance. For them, though it seems, they say that ignorance is understanding matter as eternal, or the cause is eternal, rather. In other words, does not put matter as eternal. They say cause is eternal. So if somebody thinks the cause is eternal, so then there is bondage. From bondage, it goes to so many... What to speak of bondage? As soon as somebody comes to this thing, there is an impression, oh, I have this with me. So it will be with me. I want it. So the very attachment is because of thinking something is eternal. We also say the same thing, but in a different sense. We know that, suppose today I have a 100 rupee note. It is true, it is temporary. That's a fact. The Buddhists also talk about the same thing, but in a different context. They say that as soon as this 100 rupees becomes... you buy something from that. Say you buy a kilo of sweets from that 100 rupees. The 100 rupees is gone. It doesn't exist. But we say there is transformation of energy. One form to another form. The 100 rupees is still there. But in another form. But these Buddhists, what they say, now the existence of the 100 rupees itself has gone. Just to give you a brief idea, that's all. Because of this, there is a constant change, and it's circular fashion without an axle. That is the most important point. If you have a cycle, if you have a chakra, or if you have some wheel with 12 spokes, which are constantly changing from one situation to another situation, without an axle, the wheel doesn't have any existence. Now this is the first problem. How can there be a wheel without an axle? The second problem was, if there is... Okay, conceiving that there is a wheel without an axle, how do you explain liberation? When the liberation is going to happen? Now, if liberation is there, then they say that liberation means to get rid of ignorance, avidya. By saying so, they are accepting that avidya is constant. According to their philosophy, everything is at temporary, everything is changing at every second. Like the modern scientists also, they talk about the same thing. They say that this body is constantly changing. New cells are born, old cells die. New cells are born, old cells die. So everything is constantly changing. And they bring this philosophy of the constant flux. They use this word flux to say that the matter is on a constant flux. That is a scientific theory. It is coming from the Buddhism. Buddhism also talks about this flux. Flux means, now this becomes that, and this becomes something, this becomes that. Again, it goes to another thing. So in this way, there is chakra. We also talk about sansar chakra. They also talk about the same thing. So that is why many people say, Buddhism and Hinduism, both are same. The only difference is, they accept some God who is unseen. Buddhists are very frank saying that there is nothing. The Hindus, they accept some God who is not seen, who is as good as zero. And now these Buddhists, they are very frank in telling there is nothing. Because many other terms are same. They use this word chakra. And fortunately or unfortunately, you have in the Indian flag, tricolor flag, in the middle there is a chakra. Right? There is a chakra with 12 scopes. That is known as Ashoka chakra. And that is this. We say, Garu Sekh Om Hindu, hey, Bharat Mata Ki Jai, and open the, raise this flag, and what you are showing to everyone? You are showing Buddhism. Ashoka embraced Buddhism. He became a Buddhist. Kalinga war happened, and after that he saw the blood flowing, and he thought, all this war happened because of these Brahmins. And Ashoka developed hatred towards the Brahmins, the Karmakandis. It is because of them he had to do the Kalinga war. This entire history because. And now he thought, let me just embrace Buddhism, accept Buddhism. And now, emblem of peace. Now, without the basis of consciousness, if you say everything is mind, and the mental states change from one pattern to other pattern, then what happens? Buddhism also changed. Originally it started with non-violence, and now you can see they don't spare a cockroach. Naturally, according to their own theory, it's going to happen. If everything you accept as a change, the philosophy what they are speaking is also going to change. Now, they don't talk about an eternal thing. For in Buddhism, there is nothing called eternity. There is nothing called eternity. Everything is in a constant flux. So, Nyaya is a first thing of a first guru of these materialistic people, or materialist modern science. And from Nyaya came out Buddhism. The only thing is, Nyaya, they talked about God, they talked about something called soul. Anyhow, both are anyhow unconscious. And Buddhism was very frank in telling, why accept some God, why accept some soul? Remove God, remove soul. In one sense, if you take Nyaya philosophy, remove God and remove soul from there, that is Buddhism. And from Buddhism, if you take multiple lives, that is modern science. That's all. So this is the first kind of Buddhism which was refuted yesterday. We'll read last one. Yeah. The last paragraph we read and go to the next kind of Buddhism. In all existence is simply ever-changing equilibrium. Just now explained about that. Then there could be no steady motivation to attain anything. Now, if you tell a boy, your son or your daughter, my dear son, work hard so that you can pass the exam and you can get a good job. Now, the situation is now at present, if somebody works hard, get a good marks and get good marks and you can get into a good college or get a good job. Now, if everything is changing, then the Sutrakara here, Vyasa, Baladeva Vidyabhushan, refutes saying that, then what is the use of endeavor? If I am definite of getting something, then only I'll endeavor. Why I should endeavor anything? A person, his desire and his goal would be put, would be but unique events that exist only for a moment. It is true that we also say everything is temporary, everything momentary. But when the Buddhists say, that they say it in a different sense. Because the situation, the states itself change, but the matter, like for example, Kartal is there. Kartal has got a certain word, certain propensity, certain quality. According to Buddhist, after some time, some kind of Buddhist say Kshana, within a second, the state changes, the quality changes. So, and his goal would be put to unique events, exists only for a moment, to be replaced by a different person, desire and goal in the next moment. As there is no permanent substratum to determine the order of events, results would appear without any real cause. Thus, it would be useless to direct one's effort to attain a result. Simply by his existence in a fortuitous instance of time, a person who does nothing would attain the desired goal. Yet, Buddhists direct themselves to a future goal of liberation. So, according to their theory, even if somebody doesn't do anything, he can achieve some goals. If that is the case, why the Buddhists are doing so much of hard work to attain liberation? Now, next kind of Buddhists. These Buddhists, they are more easy to understand. Yogacara Buddhists. Yogacara or Vijnanavada doctrine is subjective idealism. Accordingly, there is no objective reality. The eternal world does not exist. Means subjective world reality means there is no question of any spiritual world, eternity, nothing. They are only subjective ideas. Now, this is where this Buddhism is more famous these days. Mm-hmm. You must have heard this thing. When you talk to some materialistic people, oh, yeah, what is your idea? Yeah, they give the idea. So, what is your idea? Oh, this is a very nice idea. What is your idea? Oh, very nice idea. This is my idea. Class over. That is Buddhism. Means everything exists only because of ideas. These are only ideas. This world exists because of somebody's idea. This fan exists. And they give proof that everything comes from ideas only. How somebody made this fan? Because of ideas. Isn't it? So the world is full of ideas only. That's all. It is only mind. It is a projection of mind. The world is a projection of mind. The sum and substance of the Yogacara Buddhism is they give so much of emphasis to mind. And they say mind, if you remove, if you put the qualities of soul in the mind, so-called mind, which they talk about, in our philosophy we say soul, isn't it? So you substitute the soul with the mind, that is Yogacara Buddhism. So these people, the Buddhists, because of their philosophy, everything is based on mind, their whole process is just mind. Concentration, that concentration. And from these Buddhists are the source of all the lower kinds of arts. You have this martial arts and all these things. Their whole purpose is, I'll make my body in such a way so that I can have total control of my body by my mind. And after some level, I'll have my mind made so peaceful that there no idea should come. Like many people in India also, they try. See, make your mind zero. Make your mind thoughtless. So this is what is there. This idea, this world exists because of your thoughts and ideas. So stop your thoughts and ideas. The world stops is existing to you. That is liberation. So these are more contemporary Buddhists. The first kind of Buddhists, two kinds of Buddhists discussed, they're all gone because it's not very practical for people. Nothing is practical for anybody, but these are people who have preached to the West. And these Buddhists are those who are known as lacto-vegetarians. It's a famous thing in the West. Lacto-vegetarian means I'm a vegetarian, I don't even drink cow milk. Because cow milk is a transformation of blood. So they don't drink milk. It's called lacto-vegetarianism. This is a Buddhism which is very famous in the West. They teach, they are preaching like anything. That this is everything is just ideas. Everything came from ideas. This cow shed came from ideas. This, like somebody had an idea, that is why they built this building. Somebody has an idea, that is why somebody built this temple. So everything exists because of ideas. So stop ideas, no. Stop thoughts, then no world. Even they say that the ingredients of the materials which we use is also ideas. They reduce everything to ideas. And ultimately they name a group of ideas as atom. Atom is made up of a group of ideas. How anybody can think such kind of philosophies? Nobody knows. This is like we have many upper sampradayas, isn't it? In my Gaudiya Vaishnava, pure Gaudiya Vaishnava line, many upper sampradayas. Like that, Maheshogi and all these people, the upper sampradaya of the Patanjali Yoga system, and Goenka and all these people are the upper sampradayas of the original Buddhistic line. They're not even that original Buddhist. Very crazy. And they do go and do Maun Rat. In Bombay, it's a big thing. They have 1 week course. What you should do there? No speaking. Silence. And if you want something, you should write and give. Hey, it's as good as speaking. Suppose, for example, you have some throat problem and you are not able to speak. So, is it the same thing? No, I don't want to speak. There is an argument which I had with a person when I was in Calcutta. It was a youth form student, kind of going to temple, coming, not very, very much chanting to 16 rounds and all, but I used to do a lot of service. So, in Calcutta, the Rath Yatra is very famous Rath Yatra. 2 years practically, I was the right hand for ex-temple president at the time in Calcutta. So, I used to put the pandal, everything. And so, there was one person who came to our stall. I was fixing up something, and there was one boy, simple boy. Bengalis are very good in argument. He came and told the boy. He came, he was standing, and the boy started explaining. He says, Prabhupada, he has written this, this happened, that happened. Nicely pitched. And there's an elderly Bengali person. He took the book and kept aside and told that boy. You see, because his boy was telling, Prabhupada bole chen, Prabhupada told this, Prabhupada told this. So he told, Tumi jani, do you know? Amar guru ki bole chen? Do you know what my guru told? Then this boy was looking. Amar guru bole chen, ye jani, bolte na, jani na. The point he was telling was, one who knows will not speak, and one who doesn't know, he speaks. That's this yogacara. One who knows, he doesn't speak and doesn't think. No thoughts. That's called knowledge according to them. According to these yogacara Buddhists, the moment you attain knowledge, you stop speaking and stop thinking. So then, this boy was like, talking. Then I came down and told, "Acha, apne guru bole chen ki, ye to jani, bolte na? To jani na, wo bolte? Apne guru ne kya na bole chen? Why did your guru speak?" Why did your guru speak? Then he kept quiet. Then your guru told that one who knows doesn't speak. Then why is he speaking? So, this is their problem. I thought you will find many people in Calcutta. Yeah.
Radha Gopal Maharaj is giving the next counter. Is example. All the teachers, they know so many sastra. He calling all the students, he say, I am not even sastra, this I am not speaking. Just keep quiet in your class.
These for them liberation for Yogacara Buddhists, they are more prominent than any other kind of Buddhists because their philosophy is a kind of very attracting to people. See, ideas are there. You stop thinking. Anyway. Perception of material world arises from these ideas. And therefore have no existence apart from thoughts. Ideas arise from desire, and thus reality is only a state of mind. But refutation starts. In fact, perception consists of three factors. Perceiver, the thing perceived, and the perception itself. Like we have this thing, knowledge, knower, known. Anywhere you have these three things. Knowledge, knower, known. Perception, perceived, perceiver. So, until unless you have these three realities, perception is not possible. Knowledge is not possible. So, in this way, Buddhists are refuted in just one line. That's enough. Yogacara Buddhists argue that the perceivable world exists in the same way as the dream does. Ah, now they say, no, actually, world, perceived world exists as if it's a dream. But the point is, but a dream consists of memories, Prabhu. Nobody will have dreams just like that. None of the dreams come from out of the world. Any dream, whatever we see, it is all our experience in the previous either previous life or this life. Until unless you have some previous experience of those things, in the dreams they don't appear. Sometimes you fly in the dream, you had flown somewhere in the past, that is, you have this experience. Even what to speak of dreams, even hallucinations. When somebody gets drunk, or somebody takes some intoxication or some drugs, they have hallucinations. The difference between a dream and a hallucination is, in hallucination is something like you see, you have seen gold and you have seen a mountain. In hallucination, what you do, you mix both of them. Oh, golden mountain. I'm on the golden mountain. So, even hallucinations don't come without previous experiences. Either in this life or previous life or some life, you have seen it or heard it or done. Then only you have dreams. So where have you seen anybody getting dreams from without experience? Then any dream can come to anybody. If that is the case, then you can conceive of something which you have not thought of before. Then even if something comes, where are they coming from? Okay, accepted. You are getting a dream which is not based on your previous experience. Then where is it coming from? The entire process is to find out where is it coming from. Then it should be inspiration, there should be soul, there should be Paramatma. So I'll go further. Next it comes like this. So, but a dream consists of memories of wakeful perceptions. Wakeful perception persists day after day. But dreams, being mere mental images, do not persist. Dream images may change abruptly. When a person wakes up from a dream, he knows it to be unreal. But people do not awaken from wakeful perception in the same way that they awaken from sleep. Dreams and wakefulness are therefore two different states of material consciousness. Now, Vedanta clearly states, okay, this is one point, one argument, that the dream also happens only when there are previous impressions. Okay. Accepting that the perceptions are like dream, but the point is, in your dream, somebody has come and then stolen everything of all your possessions. And in reality, somebody has stolen all your possessions. Do you react the same? No, you don't react the same. That shows that these are the two distinct states of consciousness, dream and wakefulness. So, that philosophy which doesn't accept these three conditioned states of consciousness, that is wakefulness, dream state and deep sleep. That philosophy which doesn't accept these three states of consciousness is not accepted as a philosophy at all, according to Vedanta, according to Vyasa. The transcendental state of consciousness is Turiya. Turiya means transcendental. You are with Krishna, you are always thinking of Krishna, always completely engrossed in Krishna. So, material consciousness, in the material world, we have three states. That is, Swapna, Sushupti, Jagrata. Swapna, Sushupti, Jagrata. Now, these people, what are they saying? Swapna, according to their argument, Swapna and Jagriti both are same. But it is not so. Both are not same. Now, we are Jagrata, isn't it? You are able to hear. You are able to do something. Now, somebody gives example. There are many people who, in their sleep, have gone somewhere and learned. Like Kumbhakarna. In Ramayana it comes. Kumbhakarna, he was 6 months sleeping. Isn't it? In those 6 months, what he used to do? He was actually sleeping and snoring. But in the subtle body, he went all around the world and then learned scriptures and came back into the subtle body. But though he is sleeping externally, his subtle body went. That is not dream state. That is called wakeful state. Kumbhakarna's body was sleeping, but his mind was quite conscious and learning things. Somebody may argue like this, but still, the Vedanta says, that kind of yogis can do that. Yogis, they are sleeping, but still they are able to learn things, memorize things and convey messages. That is called yoga. By great practice of yoga, you get that power to even know things, even your body is at rest. If you can go out of the body, it's called out of body experience. Even out of body experience is also called conscious or jagrata state of consciousness. Swapna, Jagruta, Sushupti. Those who don't distinguish between three states of mental consciousness, definitely they would err in their philosophy. But this is the problem with them. They say dream and wakefulness are therefore two distinct, two different states of mental consciousness. Now how can you say both are same? Still, the Vedic version is that the wakeful state of mental consciousness is also a dream. But it is a dream created by the Supreme Lord. Now, when the Mayavadi said dream, when the Buddhists say this world is a dream, and when we say this world is a dream, all three are different. When the Buddhists say this world is a dream, they say wakeful state and the dream state both are same. When the Mayavadis say this world is a dream, they say the world doesn't exist. As much as dream, things don't exist in reality, this world doesn't exist in reality. When the Vaishnavas say this world is a dream, be very careful. When we also say this world is Swapnava, dream means like the soul has nothing to do with the experiences of which you have in this world. Nothing to do with the experiences. As much as you have nothing to do with the experiences which happen in the dream. That is what we meant to say. Like for example, in the dream, somebody is kicking you and you are feeling pain. Oh, you're suffering. But that has nothing to do with you. You wake up and you say nothing has happened to you. Isn't it? Nothing happens to the body if somebody kicks you in dream. In the same way, nothing happens to the soul when somebody kicks your body. Because the soul has nothing to do with the experiences of the body. To explain that point, we say dream. Swapnavat. When the Mayavadis say dream, what they are saying? This world itself is dream. This is dream for them. This table is dream for them. Dream means it doesn't exist. That is what they mean to say. When the Buddhists say, actually this world is also your dream. It is only mental projections. That's all. So these are many technical points which we need to know. Like when sometimes when you are giving a lecture, one old man would say, true, its world is like a dream. That doesn't mean he is just repeating what you are saying. As I told, one good thing as I have been sometimes glorifying this Nyaya Vaisheshikas is Padartha. Knowing the meaning of the word is very important. Contextual meaning. When Shankara says Maya, it is not the same thing what we say. When Shankara says Maya, he is Mithya or Maya, he says this itself doesn't exist. When we say Maya, we are saying that my conception that this table is mine, this table is going to give me some eternal happiness, that is Maya. Yeah. So, go further. Dreams, whether in sleep or in wakeful state, are not independently created by the mind of the living entities. In summary, take for argument, okay, we accept it's dream. We accept it as dream. But still, do you think that dreams are independently created? There is a cause for the dream? Dreams don't come just like that. Actually, it's a dream science, a big science in Vedic psychology. Dreams don't come just like that. All the dreams what we see, we may think, why are they coming? It is because of me they are coming. Sometimes you see horrible dreams. Sometimes it's all coming because of something which I have experienced in the past. Going further, the Yogacara doctrine falsely claims that the perceptions of the mind arise from material desire. In fact, the reverse is true. Aha. Material desires arise from perceptions of the mind, the contemplation of external objects. Now, we know in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, what is it? Sangat sanjayate kama. First, how does it begin? Jayato vishyan pumsa sangaste shupajayate. Sangat sanjayate kama. Kamat krodo vijayate. Material desires arise from perception. Perception of the mind. Like I see something, then I start thinking. Isn't it? I start thinking that how I should enjoy. That is called materialistic intelligence. intelligence, tamasa buddhi. Krishna Prabhupada says that soul, the intelligence is the next door of the soul. When the lust corrupts intelligence, what does intelligence see? It perceives. As soon as it perceives, it starts thinking how I should enjoy. So first there is perception and then there is desire. Isn't it? Without perception, the desire doesn't come. Like it is said that perception can be physical or mental. Sometimes you can do a mental perception. It is said that out of sight, out of mind. We heard this thing very much. Many a times it so happens that you're not sleepy, but when you see the bed, you feel sleepy. So perception of the bed makes you sleepy, isn't it? And many a times you'll be working very hard, you're completely lost in your own work, and you don't feel that you're hungry. But the moment you see something, then perception, you say, well, I am hungry, I should take it. So, desires arise from perception of the mind and the contemplation of the external sense objects. Jhayato. Jhayato vishyan pumsa sangasteshu bhajayate. So from dhyan of this thing, you have attachment, you have desire. Like other doctrines of Buddhism, Vijnanavada adheres to the notion of ever-changing equilibrium. There is therefore no permanent substratum upon which desires can be maintained. So another thing is, these Yogacara Buddhism, they also accept the previous Buddhists, what they say, of constantly changing. So even if you have a desire, how can the desire exist from one moment to other moment? Because everything is changing. Now, Shunyavad. The Shunyavad are the worst. The worst. They are the people who eat cockroach. Cockroach achar. They make. I don't know how many of you have been to China. How many have you been to China? I was there for 15 days when I was working in the ship. I just could not imagine how anybody can stay like that. How anybody can stay like that? In America, there was a saying, if somebody is very horrible, they say, go to China. And Srila Prabhupada got a lot of complaints that devotees are not staying in the temple, they're just going in Radha Damodar bus party. Then he called Tamalakrishna Maharaj, Mahaprabhupada called and told, stop this bus party. It was a shock for him because it has become a fleet of 80 buses, 90 buses. Then Tamalakrishna Maharaj told in a typical American way, Prabhupada, you mean to go, I should go to China? Prabhupada told, yes, go. Then he took it as an instruction. He started his preaching in China, and then later on others are continuing. Other Maharaj, he started the thing in China, going into China and starting Krishna consciousness. Only he can do. So there, you just what kind of people? You just cannot pass, walk on the road. If you just pass the restaurant, you will. Even after 10 minutes also, your whole body will smell of all these strange things. So these are Shunyavadis. Madhyamika or Shunyavada or voidism, it claims that the existence itself is a contradiction. For according to the Buddhist theory of ever-changing equilibrium, all things that now exist arose from the destruction of other things, just as tree arose from destroyed seed. The first kind of Buddhist. So what happened? These trees, as soon as the seed used as a seed, tree, and the seed is lost, arose from destroyed. Thus, existence did not arise from another existence. Voidism argues that existence does not arise out of non-existence. Now, they are refuting their philosophy. The first philosophy says, existence does not arise of non-existence. Either just the tree cannot arise from a roasted seed. Now, they refute their own philosophy, their own Guru Bhai, Buddhist Guru Bhai. It further claims that existence does not arise from itself. for that view would support the doctrine of Atma. Now they say, my dear Guru Bhai, if you speak this philosophy, you got two problems in that. One is, if you say from the tree, a tree is coming from the seed, why the tree is not coming from the roasted seed? Roasted. When you roast a seed, what happens? Can you put the seed in the earth? The tree is coming? No, it doesn't come. So they say existence cannot come from non-existence. So now if you accept that existence is there, you have to accept a soul. They are actually intelligent people. In one sense, intelligent. Because they understood there is a flaw in Buddhism. So they thought, if you accept existence at all, then you are accepting a source for that existence. So if you are accepting existence, you have to accept a source. There is a soul, there must be a super soul, there should be God. And our philosophy is no God. So my dear Guru Bhai, don't talk. Just say no existence. Nothing exists. So these are the latest. Going further. For that you would support the doctrine of Atma. If you tell this, then Atma has to be supported. Doctrine of Atma. Permanent identity. Which the Buddha rejected. Our Buddha has rejected this thing. Why these variations in Buddhism, these things are coming? Because Buddha did not reject. As you know, Buddha kept silence. He was silent on this issue. On the issue of soul, on the issue of God. People asked him, what about soul and God? He kept silence. The silence of Buddha were misunderstood by people as no soul, no God. So originally, when Krishna Buddha, he kept silent. That is where people start concocting no God, no soul. Because one of the reasons, if you accept soul and God, you have to accept Veda. And Buddha told what? Nindhasi yajna viderahaha shudidatam. Jayadeva Goswami glorifies Buddha. Sadaya hradaya darshita pashughatam. Keshavadrita bhodda sharira jay jagadish hare. Dashavatara stotra. Jayadeva Goswami, Gita Govinda. He says, Nindhasi yajna vidhi. He criticized the yajna vidhi. Even though, shruti jatam. Even though they are Vedic, he said, no Veda, no Shruti. And then, sadaya hradaya darshita pashughatam. What is the reason for it? He could not see pashughatam. Pashughatam means the killing of the animals. That is why he said, no, no Veda. Now, there's a problem here. When they asked about God and soul, Buddha had to keep his mouth shut. So that is why they concocted, now, no God, no soul. Even if they had to accept that there is God or soul, immediately Veda comes into picture. So, no God, no soul. They understood that this is the teaching of Buddha. So, these words say, Buddha he said, no God, no soul. So, we had to make a philosophy which is very much in balance, without any questions, without any flaws in it, to match the philosophy that no God, no soul. So, that is why the first people they tried out, first kind of Buddhists, they tried out, it is only just the projection of mind, variable, this thing. And then the Yogacharas came. They told it is only just a dream. And the third people told nothing exists. Just see, they are actually, one sense, they are telling the truth. If there is no God, nothing exists. So in our philosophy, no God. So the philosophy remains like Shunya idam jagat sarvam govinda. So if you go Govinda, the whole world becomes Shunya. Of course. In the same way, these Buddhists, in one sense, these Madhyamika Buddhists, we have to appreciate them for being very frank. You know, we are in a problem of not accepting God and soul. So better say nothing exists. Better say nothing. So these kind of philosophers were very much prominent during Madhva's time. So yesterday I was giving the story of Madhva. The class, I didn't talk about this story, I will talk today. One Buddhisagara came. Vadisimha and Buddhisagara. Two. One was Buddhisagara was Buddhist and Vadisimha was Jain. These two came to argue with Achyuta Preksha. Achyuta Preksha is a very famous sannyasi. They came to the mat and everybody assembled as a devotee organized. Sumad Dvaija says, like Lord Ram would take the best of the arrow and then shoot at Ravana. In the same way, Achyuta Preksha, he took the best arrow called Madhva and shot at these two. So Madhva is sitting, the Buddhist first started arguing. The Buddhist, he sat and then he said, everything is nothing. That was the statement he made. First is statement, isn't it? Then what comes? Doubt and other things comes. Then he made a statement. Then Madhva, yes, everything is nothing. Everything includes what you are saying. So what you are saying is nothing. Then they looked at each other and told, I see, it's already evening time. The muhurta is not proper. Maybe we should do it tomorrow. Then Madhva told, you will do it today. What is the problem today? Then they went on arguing about time. So how time is not the right, this is not the right time to argue and all these things. Till tomorrow morning we'll sit and argue. One line of Madhva was enough to defeat his yogi. Because he was the person, Yogacara Buddhist. He told, everything is nothing. That was the only statement. And Madhva just made three sentences. Everything is nothing. So what you are saying includes everything. So what you are saying is also nothing. Three steps. So this is what Madhva was. So we'll go further about these people. Therefore, there is no creation. If there is no creation, then there is no destruction. Creation, destruction, cause, effect, being and non-being are all unreal. The only reality is shunya, void. Void requires no explanation, no origin. For itself, it's self-existent, self-proved. They say, no creation. The problem is when creation happens, isn't it? So no creation, no destruction. If there is no creation, no destruction, no being, no non-being, no knowledge, no ignorance. Nothing is there. The only reality is shunya. So if we accept the shunya, philosophy of shunya, then there is no explanation required at all. Even if somebody goes and asks, why are you eating cockroaches? Everything is shunya. No explanation is required. Buddha told, they were only killing goats and that too for sacrifice. For that sake, Buddha told, don't accept Veda. And now they are not even speaking a cockroach in the name of Buddhism. Because shunya. So according to them, even if somebody gives a sermon, that is also for some lower kind of people. For them, sermon means you should sit, that's all, no speaking. Why don't you speak on Buddhistic philosophy? Our philosophy is shunya, so I don't want to speak. Even this is also I should not speak. Just keep quiet. Everybody gets together, nobody speaks. That is why these people came. That Goenkas, they are coming from this branch. They built a huge pagoda. Pagoda kind of thing, huge kind of planetarium kind of globe in Bombay. Spending crores and crores of rupees. Goenka built it. We went to see the architecture. Very nice architecture. Built by the same person who built the Akshardham for Trivedi. He was his architect. Full stone structure. A huge thing. And I went inside. And then I asked one person, why is this built? People around the world are going to come. And they don't want any disturbances. They want to be aloof from the world. This structure is the best kind of structure in archaeology, so that the outside world influence will not be there. They all will come and do meditation and there will be a pin drop silence and they can understand everything is zero. Then I told, you are the most foolish people. On the face I told. See, outside world disturbance is there. It is true. But the disturbance, there is a place for it to go away, evaporate. But here, you have built such a thing that even if somebody breathes, that will be heard 10 times more more than what you breathe. For example, I'm breathing now. You're not able to hear the sound of the breathing. But if you enter the pagoda, you can hear my breath. My breath, how, because it's so totally, and that too, it reverberates, echo comes. And for example, you're going to bring people from all over the world, and they'll sneeze. What will happen? And then you told, yeah, it is true. It's foolishness. In the age of Kali, do you think people will not sneeze, will not cough? No, everybody will come and do dhyana and go away. People are going to sneeze. And anyway, because it's going to become a big attraction for Bombay. People are going to come and see. Anybody just pay some money, they'll go inside and they'll do something. They'll bring some plastic paper and do it. And all the 1,000 people will be sitting, everybody will hear the plastic sound. And now I told, you have chosen a wrong place. You have chosen exactly a place next to the SL World. You know what is SL World? I don't know how many of you don't know what SL World is in Bombay. SL World is all the place where you have this kind of children park, water sport. And a huge sound is there. I told, okay, he did the meditation now. 1 week he is inside and did. When he comes out, what is he going to hear? Some child is crying out, ah, like that. That's what happened to his meditation. So these are yoga charabuddhas. Yes, but then they want to realize shunya by keeping mauna. And they say that we don't say what you have to do, what you have to eat. You can do anything in your life. But you just have to come and then realize that ultimately everything is zero. What you are doing is zero. What you are going to achieve is zero. What was there before is zero. So that is what it is. Well, then why are you charging for the ticket? A ticket, there is a fees. Why not zero fees? So then they bring this word vyavaharika. Yesterday I did not mind about this word vyavaharika. When we talk about distinction, we find distinction in this world. How are you going to refute this distinction? The Mayavadis use this word vyavaharika. Vyavaharika. For practicality we use that. So otherwise it is not there. Now, going further to some extent, these Mayavadis, when they asked about what about the verses which talk about duality of the soul and the Lord, means they are different. These, they categorize the entire Veda in two parts. He says, Paramarthika and Vyavaharika. The verses which talk about the oneness of God and soul, they say it is Paramarthika, spiritual. And the verses which talk about soul and Lord to be different, they say these verses are Vyavaharika. You see, only those who are situated in Advaita, oneness, they can understand spirituality. What about others? To bring them to the platform of Advaita, the other verses are explaining the Vyavaharika. So this, they use this word Vyavaharika only for practical purpose. And they give the example of saying, this hand, this leg, this eyes, nose. The distinction is only there till the person doesn't know the body. If he knows the body, this is a body, then what is the use of distinction? So all these things we use the word only for the Vyavaharika. When you see a person as one unit. But even though, my dear sir, you see it as a unit, within the unit there are distinctions. So, Vyavaharika is... Now, there are some who go further and then say, Krishna, without worshipping Krishna, you cannot reach Advaita. You have to worship Krishna. Then only you can become liberated and understand absolute truth as Advaita. Non-dual substance. Even Bhagavatam says this. Advaitam, Advaya Jnanam. So, and these people who give classes on Bhagavatam and explain Advaita, they are the most dangerous people. The Bhagavatam Mayavadis means those who try to explain by Advaita, Bhagavatam, based on Bhagavatam. Prabhupada was very furious on them. He told, Sripa Shankaracharya never touched Bhagavatam. He did not want to do an offense to Bhagavatam. And these people, they don't even follow their guru. They don't even follow their guru. Shankaracharya did not give a comment in Bhagavatam. He paid obeisance to Bhagavatam. I don't want to do an offense to your lotus feet. But these people, Prabhupada says one place, they think that they have become better than Shankara. Thinking that I am more than my guru is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. The etiquette what we follow is this. We don't give commentaries to the verses which Prabhupada has not given commentary on. That's the etiquette. The etiquette is, I don't give a Bhagavatam class to which my Guru Maharaj has not given a commentary. That is the reason Prabhupada has not given commentary for these three verses. We are going to the fourth verse, but I will read the other verses. It is an etiquette. It says, it's an etiquette. My Guru Maharaj has not given a commentary. I'll pay obeisances to it. Go to the next verse. And now, he has not given a commentary on Bhagavatam. And how can they give a commentary on Bhagavatam? Mayavadis give a commentary on Bhagavatam. Prabhupada is very, very... They are the people who are now... Because anyhow, there is nothing to explain Advaita. Everything is just one after that. Okay, Nirvishesha, Nirvikalpa, Nirakara, Anamika, Nirguna. After that what? You have to spend 3 hours of giving Bhagavata Sapta. And what will I do? So take Bhagavatam. And ultimately that Krishna is nothing but a product of Maya. When Brahman is influenced by Sattvaguna, then he becomes Krishna, he becomes Rama. Next. Okay, but in fact the void theory disproves itself, for if all the means of knowledge and argument are unreal, then the void theory cannot be established. So this is what Madhvacharya wanted to say. If even your argument is also, this is the line Madhva writes. Madhva says, we just now mentioned that point. I did not realize this is there here. If everything is zero, what you are arguing is zero, how can you establish void then? It's very difficult to establish something. Now the Jains. Anybody is a Jain here? Was a Jain before? But in Bombay, wherever you go, you get Jain food. And our devotees eat Jain food. Because they get with onion, garlic and not even aloo. Good. One thing good with the Jain is they don't eat onion, garlic and then aloo. When you are going to become Jains, give up aloo in our prasadam. We had to bring Jain cooks. make a Jain into a devotee and make him the kitchen in charge. No aloo. Practically every doctor in Bombay knows, iskan achacha, no problem for you. Don't eat aloo for 1 month, you'll become okay. Every doctor knows. Especially in Bhaktivedanta Hospital, some devotee goes, along with the medicine, he says, no aloo for 1 month. Going further, Jains, these people are, their philosophy is something like a very, very strange. For them, liberation is something hanging in the space. No, not hanging, like going upward in the space. Like one Jain, really Jain scholar, he knows something about Jainism. And he studied books. He's a very intelligent boy. And he read the Jainism books. And that too because once he came to my class and then told I'm a Jain. Do you know the Jain philosophy? He felt hurt. Because he was not knowing. And he did not tell me that he's reading. After 2 years he told Prabhuji, I read all books. Then I told, okay, I don't know about anything about Jainism. Can you tell me what is the meaning of, what do you achieve after your sadhana and what is liberation? What is the liberated state? He told, he gave an example, quoting an example of his guru, who is also a very, very learned person, big businessman. He had more than 10,000 crores or something like that. I was telling, he just gave it up one day and then became a Jain sadhu. And he gave an example, it seems. Our liberation is like a rocket and a satellite. I don't know how many of you know this, how the rocket is, satellite is launched. And in the modern science, the stupid gravitation theory they talk about, there is nothing like gravitation. It's Adhara Shakti, which is spoken in the scriptures. So the earth is there, and around the earth, according to the modern science, there is not actually reality. There is something called a gravitational field. Isn't it? So, and the earth that attracts everything, so everything is here. And the rocket, it has to, they put a satellite on top of the rocket. The rocket has many phases, 1, 2, 3, 4, like that. And on top they put the satellite. And the rocket, they launch it, they fire it. And one stage goes, and the other stage goes, and the third stage goes, like that. And then, all these rockets, different stages, they're all fuel. And finally, these ammunition, watches their, what the fuel they put, this only to get that satellite out of the gravitational field. Once the rocket takes the satellite outside the gravitational field, and it just leaves, and the satellite just roams around, and there are some satellites who just go without control, up, up and up and up and up, and there is no description. So then this person told, all our sadhana is to reach one stage, next stage, and then there is a stage after which no description. You'll be just going up and up and up and up and up. Then I thought, enough now. No, go further here. The Jain doctrine divides the world into two categories, that is jiva and living and non-living. Living entities are eternal and have consciousness, intelligence and senses. Soul has the same size. Oh, now just see. It seems very good. The soul has the same size of their material bodies. I have a bigger soul.
Elephant is bigger.
Isn't it? Elephant is bigger. Non-life is of five kinds. Now, the non-life, they say, there are five kinds. That is dharma, it's adharma, it's not dharma again, adharma, impiety. Pudgala, that is material bodies, and kala, time, and akasha, space. Dharma causes motion, adharma causes immobility. A single type of atom comprises all material elements. Now, time is also an atomic element, you see. Yes. One thing, there are certain things you should understand. When you talk about philosophy, those philosophies, if you want to really find out whether this philosophy is genuine or not, if they accept time as energy of God, they are some kind of Vaishnavas at least. If they don't accept time as energy of God, they just say, this time is also an atomic element. Within the Jain prescriptions for so-called liberation are seven factors. The jiva, matter, the senses, the exertion of passion, the obstructions of the path, bondage, samsara, and release, moksha. There are four kinds of bad karmas, or ghatika karmas, and four kinds of good karmas, aghatika karmas. The jiva is released from the eight kinds of karma by right knowledge, right seeing, and right conduct, as taught in the Jain scriptures. Liberation is accomplished by the jiva remaining stationary in the aloka akash, the space beyond all worlds, and by ever moving towards higher and higher limbs. By ever moving higher and higher limbs. Now no description after that. Just go. That's all. Higher and higher limbs you'll be going. Where? Don't ask. How long? Don't ask. Jainism views to all other philosophies as being comprised of one of the seven standpoints. That the truth is either existence or non-existence, existence and non-existence, different from existence and non-existence, different from existence during existence, different from non-existence during existence, different from both existence and non-existence, during both. I don't know what they want to say. Yeah, just to confuse people, that's all. Isn't it? Simple, Krishna is Supreme Lord, you're the servant, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. It sounds very... Isn't it? If something is wrong, then you confuse. They think that you are speaking something I cannot understand. Like it is a general tendency in India. Once they go to some class or something like that, you go and ask them, what did he say? So he said something wonderful. What did he say? Hari, if I have understood, how can you accept it as truth? They think something truth cannot be understood. And if somebody is speaking, if I understand, it's something useless. And none of the Jains have the brains, real brains, not many of them. I mean, one or few, they just read all these things. But most of them, they are businessmen, they're vaishyas. Even vaishyas are only good in counting money, that's all. Their whole life they count money. And all of a sudden, they give their son to very aristocratic families. They give their son to the son sadhu. And the sadhu, they go through all kinds of horrible things when giving the initiation of sadhu. They pluck the hairs, horrible things. Just cannot even see what they do. And they think that they fast for 30 days without drinking. So much of tapasya they do. Those things, they all do everything. But I don't know how many of them read really books. And most of the Jains these days, they are only talking about do good things. And one thing they do is protect cows. They talk about it, protect cows. Do good things, do charity. Those things they say. And that too only to the Jains, not to others. And all their money earned by illegal means, it goes into the store. See the temples what they built? The carving, the structure. Oh, Jain temples are best architecture. Architecturally, they spent so much money in marble. Each temple cross, in every Bombay, every half a kilometer you find a Jain temple. And each temple is not less than 7-8 crores. Each temple. We talk about so much of temple construction. We are building temple, this big temple, that big temple. And Jain community is so strong with finances. Because Vaishyas.
This golden temple in Amritsar?
Oh, that is Sardar. That is Sardar. Nadiwala Sikh. They don't have a philosophy as such. Akal Murat. Akal Murat. What is that full thing? Anybody knows about this? Jain.
Not full, but
Omkar. Satnam. Ek Omkar, Satnam. Satsriyakal is a wish only.
Akal Murat, Ajuni Seval.
Ajuni Seval. It's all. Now they say everything is perfectly according to the scriptures. Because it is just a part of Vaishnavism, that's all. The Jnanamishra Bhakta. What's his name? First, Guru Nanak was a Jnanamishra Bhakta. Jnanamishra Bhakta, Guru Nanak. So he described God in the personal form. And his descriptions are like, oh Lord, when can I meet you? You are everywhere, but still I am not able to see. When I am going to see? That kind of thing is there. So he is known as Akal. Akal means on whom the time has no influence. Akal. And Murat. Murat means he's got a Murti. Murti in Punjabi it becomes Murat. So he's got a form. They say this Akal, Murat, but they worship impersonal. They remove the Krishna deity from the golden temple. And then they worship Granth Sahib. Good. Granth Sahib is worshipable. And worshipping Grantha is one of the upachars. Whatever deity worship you do to the deity, if you don't have the deity when you are traveling, you can do the same deity worship to your Bhagavad Gita. You can do the offerings, you do chamara, you do everything to the deity. It is one of the aspects. In ISKCON, this thing has not gone into devotee's mind. They just say, oh, Bhagavad Gita is as good as Krishna. But you can keep the Bhagavad Gita and is as good as a deity. You can offer the bhoga to the Bhagavad Gita. You can. It is not that there is Krishna on the Bhagavad Gita, that is why I am offering that Krishna on the Bhagavad Gita. Once it happened in the train, I was taking yatra. One devotee told, Prabhuji, we will offer these fruits. It will offer. Then he told, you see, Bhagavad Gita ke upar Krishna ka photo hai na, nikalo usko, unko lagayenge. Then I took a 1 hour class. What is this? On Bhagavad Gita there is Krishna's photo, you will offer to that Krishna. Bhagavad Gita is not Krishna. Then I told, you will not offer to Krishna today, you will offer to Bhagavad Gita. Like, but Bhagavad Gita ko kaise offer karenge? Bhagavad Gita thodi na kaata. Then you go to Sardar. Sardars are better, you know. They are better conscious. They know this book is God. How many of you have been to Golden Temple?
Amritsar.
You've been there?
Huh? Big book there.
Yeah. I like you have Bhagavad Gita, small book, a big edition. Book is. It's a book, it's known as Granth Sahib. Guru Granth Sahib. It's known as Granth Sahib. I'll come back to the point. I'll tell the Granth Sahib. Worshipping the Grantha is true. Gita also they worship, but not. That is known as Granth Sahib. This Granth Sahib is a collection of different songs written by Namdev and many Vaishnavas from this area from Vraj. And many teachings of Namdev and different Sikh gurus who are all speaking Vaishnavism. The first time I purchased, when I went there, I just purchased that book, the entire set which comes in 7 or 8 volumes. And I just saw what's there inside. I heard many times Ram and name of Hari comes there. I just opened the book and the first time I just saw a verse, you know what was the verse? It has English translate says, one who doesn't take the name of Ram is going to be a resident of hell. It clearly says. The first verse which I saw it was this. So they are not Jains. They are Sardars. And originally the temple, even till today, it is known as Har Mandir. Har Mandir. Harika Mandir. It is Hari's temple. Actually, there was a Krishna's deity there. Lakshmi Narayan. Some people say Lakshmi Narayan deity. And later on, the Sikhs removed it. And there were around all the surroundings, they had the deities of different demigods. So that originally, that was a construction. So they were all in the following devotion. So Bhagavad Gita is there. They respect Bhagavad Gita. One thing is there. Bhagavad Gita they respect. One reason why they respect Bhagavad Gita is this thing. Because Kurukshetra is quite in there, nearby. And then they respect Bhagavad Gita. One thing. And also one book which it is according to Guru Nanak you have to read every day in the night before you sleep. Which now they don't publicize that. They don't publish it. Earlier, every Sikh, if they don't have Granth Sahib, no problem. You should have this book. That is known as Dasama Grantha. It is nothing but 10th canto of Bhagavatam. If you go and ask, Dasama Grantha dijiye, then they'll say all these things. Then it's okay, Punjabi mein hai. It's only in Punjabi. And they want to delete it. From there, because Krishna clearly has told, without reading Dasama Grantha, you should not sleep. That is the rule Manak made. And Gobind Singh used to give lectures on Dasama Grantha. Dashamagrantha is 10th canto, 10th skanda. Now, earlier it was only Hindu, Sikh, Isai. Hindu, Muslim, Isai. But we, later on, originally this was a song. Now what they made? Hindu, Muslim, Sikh, Isai. The Sikh word was not there before. Sikh as a religion was not there before. Because it's a chala dharma. In Bhagavatam, many kinds of dharmas are explained. One kind of dharma is chala dharma. Adharma is there. Nitya dharma, naimittika dharma, chala dharma. Like that, many kinds of dharmas are there. Chala dharma means to cheat someone, an acharya can create a particular dharma. To teach them, cheat the Muslims who are creating a big havoc for the Brahmins. And they were spoiling all the Brahmins' wives and they were doing so much of tyachar. So then Guru Nanak, he created an army to fight with the Muslims. And that is why he told you should have a sword always with your, in your hand. And the sword became so small. And according to the sixth, Faika. What are the Faikas? Kangi, Kum, and another is Kacha. If you want to fight, you should have a Kacha. You can fight with the people. And Khadga, that is the fifth one. The third one, other one, Kesh. Kesh, you should have hair because you don't have time to do the haircut. What are the things? Kripanto and Khadga is okay. And the Kangar, Kada. It's very interesting. And anyway, Mataji, why you made me speak all these things? Because you got a confusion about a Jain and the Sikhs. And talking about the Sikhs, we're leaving these Jains. That's what happens in Samaya. Anyway, interesting to know. One thing, when I went there, I saw many things which... And Prabhupada, when he went there, he accepted our halwa distribution in our temples originally started. Prabhupada, as they do in Golden Temple, you should do it in our temples. Anybody goes there, they get a cup of halwa. Originally, in earlier days in ISKCON, there is a system. Anybody goes to temple, they will get a cup of halwa. But now, only in Jew temple they have this thing. There do they give it a spoon. And they make it, it's so horrible even to eat it. But original ISKCON halwa, I don't know how many of you had this. I had it. It was so rich. Even if you pay 50 rupees, you will not get this much. In Calcutta, in the temple, I never used to go, halwa is always available. And Prabhupada was very strict in this. Anybody who comes to the temple, they should get prasad. That was the system Prabhupada made. Now they say expenses have gone up, congregation has increased and all these things. They say, too many congregation, we cannot feed them. At least give halwa. So, and Prabhupada took that. They give good halwa. You should go and see how they serve. That is how the congregation should be. Congregation means those who serve the temple. They just come and then they come in very nice, wonderful cars. Very rich people. Very rich sardars. They are owning big factories of cloth merchants from Ludhiana. The crorepatis. They come and to Gurudwaras and directly go to the Juta stall. And you give the Juta, your shoes, and go to the temple. By the time you come back, they give this. Hey, this is my, not my chappal. Sir, polish kiya hai. Svikar kijiye. I have polished your shoes. Please accept. So this is a very, very committed. Very, very committed. One, they are, somehow I like them. I really like them. For their emotional, if they accept you, they just give their life to you. They don't accept you. They'll take your life also. No doubt there are so many jokes on them in India. You can write a full this much book on them. Yes, bro, something you want to tell? Yeah.
Then the Delhi temple, the last
class student, they must be coming. A group of Sardar, they are coming from Chandichok, and they are doing this last 50 years continuously in Chitta Seva only.
See, and do it perfect.
They are doing Chitta Seva. Last 10 to 15 years continuously, they are doing Seva. A group of Sikh, they are coming every time, they are taking more, they are filling all stone, all tokens and everything.
Delhi means only 15-20 lakh people come and managing them.
And 12 lakhs people coming for this Janmashtami.
And there one other thing is their Guru Bhakti. Like I was just remembering, only difference is Ramanuja, his philosophy is not known to them, that's all. One Sikh Guru. He was put in boiling oil, in a big boiling this pot, the boiling oil the Muslims had put. And he's like about to die. The Muslim soldiers, they came, Mughal soldiers came and told that, what is your last wish? He told that, my guru's photo is there behind. So please turn my head behind so that I can look at my guru's photo and leave my body. That kind of, you just cannot imagine that kind of. There was one soldier, one Sikh guru was fighting at the Muslims because they had taken away some Brahmin's wife. And he went and fought with them. He got her released and he was fighting. It so happened, he had taken a vow. I will die in her mandir. I will give up my body in front of the Lord. So now it so happened that the Muslim Mughal soldier, he cut off his head. And his neck was cut off and the head flew up. And what this person did, he caught hold of the head, his own head, in the hand. And he's fighting. Now, fighting, he killed him. Now he's about to die. Then somebody reminded him, you have taken a vow that you are going to leave your body in Harmandir. Then he threw his head. It fell miles away and then fell inside the temple. And that is where there is his samadhi kind of thing there. He was fighting whole day with his head in his hand. That was the prana which they had. Fighting.
Who was that person?
What is his name?
Which place?
There. Unka samadhi hai udhar. The IPK, Indian Army could not pass. The tanker could not pass through that particular place from away from his samadhi. So we find that these... originally, they were all Kshatriyas, created to protect Vaishnavism, originally. But we cannot accept Guru Nanak as a pure devotee, because he is a Jnana Mishra Bhakta. That is what we can understand from his writings. Jnana Mishra Bhakta. That is why there is a train from Pandharpur to Kansa. Nanded to Amritsar. Nanded is a small place in Maharashtra. You know where Nanded? Why Nanded is a place where Guru left his body there. And why he had to come to Nanded? Because many of Namdev's writings are in Granth Sahib. So there is a great connection. And many people in north, in the place, they sing Abhangas. Okay, come back to Jain. So from Jain Alus, no Alus, to Alus, to six Sardars, we are back to Jain. Now this is what they say. Jainism views all other philosophies as being comprised of one of the seven that we read. Other philosophies are just existence, non-existence, etc. That the truth is either of these things. And now, going further, the seven standpoints of other philosophies cannot account for essentially contradictory nature of all things. The proper view is that nothing is certain. That is what they say. Nothing is certain. How many of you know about this Heisenberg's uncertainty principle? In mathematics, in physics it comes. Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. You did PhD long time back. You know, you remember. I did a wrong thing to speak that. I made you remember that. You're supposed to forget. So according to Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, he says, you cannot identify the electron and the proton, their position, and at the same time you cannot, and at the same time you can understand their potency. So potency and position cannot be understood at the same time. They are highly uncertain. So now, based on that, one philosopher says that if the world is made up of atoms and atoms are made up of electrons and protons, they are uncertain, then everything is uncertain. So that's Jain. It's again coming from what? Atomic theory of Nyaya Vaisheshikas. The Jain doctrine of uncertainty is wrong because contradiction is untenable. It is not uncertain whether people drink water instead of fire to quench their thirst. It is not uncertain. How can you say? It is certain that a person who is thirsty will drink water. No, we cannot say a person with thirst can drink fire also. What is this? No. If all things inherently were uncertain, then it would be not possible to establish a specific path to some goal. And that Jains themselves have done. You see the wordings? If according to their philosophy everything is uncertain, then you cannot have a certain path. Certain means a certain definite path. And the Jains say, only through Jainism. How? Only through Jainism is contradictory to your philosophy, because everything is uncertain, so your philosophy is also uncertain. Is it true or not true? So your certainty is uncertainty. So now, coming to this point, and these are the acharyas for our yato mat tato pat. And today's path may be true, tomorrow's path, tomorrow's same path may not be true. It's uncertain philosophy. The standpoint of the soul having the same size as the material body. Now they come to attack this point. Soul having the same size as the material body. How is it possible? Then, if there is transmigration of the soul, when the soul goes to another body, how is it possible that it is a big body in the previous life? In the next life, he goes to a body which is very small. If the soul is eternal and the same size, then its size is also eternal. So soul leaving the adult human body could not fit into another kind of body, not even another human body within the womb. No, they say, in truth the soul is extremely subtle. Though he moves from one body to another, his own identity is fixed. Material categories like size pertain only to the gross and subtle bodies. Now they say, this size of the soul is not the gross size, it is not the subtle size, it is the size of the soul. Jains may claim that in accordance with their doctrine of uncertainty, the soul's size is indefinite and can therefore change to fit the size of any body it may enter. That would mean that the soul is subject to change. Such an idea is false. So even if you apply the principle of uncertainty to the soul, sometimes the soul is this big, sometimes this big. That means I'm subject to change. There is no difference between the Jain concept of liberation and the worldly existence. Talk about liberation, just see. Both are said to be eternal. Of the two types, Jain's liberation, suspension in aloka, akasha, and endless upward motion. Suspension, aloka, akasha, endless upward motion. So you will be suspended like a ghost on a tamarind tree. You know how the South Indians know this. So in night time you're not allowed to go near a tamarind tree. He knows it. Not many tamarind trees are available. In Radharani cursed them. There is no tamarind tree here in Vrindavan. There is only one in Imlitala. So, I have seen like hanging upside down tamarind tree. Be very cautious. Night time, don't go near a tamarind tree. So that's called suspension. They are all suspended like this. Neither our actual transcendental situations, neither will satisfy the spirit souls. According to their own philosophy, the liberation itself is not satisfying to the soul, because upward motion means we're still alive, got more. Upward motion, an eternal upward motion. But our Gopakumar in Chaitanya, in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, he also had upward motion and then he got Krishna. There they put a full stop. So these Jains are eternal upward motion. And for them, in that sense, there is no sthiratha for a soul. There is no sthiratha. Material world is also not sthiratha. So better either you be the material world. So, essentially the Jains is here preaching, the modern Jains are preaching like this. They say that there are two kinds of life which you can choose, material life or spiritual life. Both are as good as each other. That's what they're preaching now. So now, there's no difference. Just live. Either you live a material life like in your house, and either you be a sadhu, just live. Because there's no difference. There's no difference in material life and spiritual life. What is the thing is, you give money to us, we give Pagay padila means we'll put our feet in your house. You give money to us and build vihars, Jain temples, so that we can stay, and we'll keep our feet there. And we'll keep our mouth shut, we'll not speak. And if at all we'll speak how to live a nice family life. That's what they talk about. So the businessmen are very happy to hear this philosophy. I don't have to give up anything. I only have to give money, that's all. Okay, I'll give.
So it's a convenient arrangement.
They
work like
psychotherapists. Like counselors. Yeah, nice. That's all. Yeah. And so both, there's no difference. And now they're openly preaching this. And there's one Jain sadhu who comes to Bhayandar. But very intelligent. He's done. Intelligence means not like that kind of understanding scriptures and all. He's got a lot of power, tejas, and he attracts people by his oration. He talks about how a woman should live, how a man should live. Only this talk. No talk of spirituality. No talk. Anything. So, this is Jains. Okay, they have saved our congregation from onion, garlic and all. One good thing they have done. In Bombay, 80% of the congregation, they go to the hotels and have Jain food. 80%. And if they have to get something to their house, the Mataji says, then the house, my husband, my Guru Maharaj is coming, you eat on your own self, I will not cook. So they say, well, what will I eat and the children will eat? He says, order from the Jain food from your nearest restaurant. Mom, make rest alive. So, yes, brother, you are telling something.
Just like this old religion, we have this Sardar, some Gurdwara in Chains and some different persons. They are worshipping his own deity. Just like they are worshipping Mahavir Ji and Sikh, they are worshipping Gurdwara. So just like the Gurdwara is like a Brahma Jyoti, like a Viraka. So what is the definition? After death, they are worshipping all these things. Just like they are reading this girl, the Rama is coming and the other man is coming, but they are worshipping this Gurudwara. So this is no duty. So after this doing because of Sarvi, once they get God.
One thing you should understand, the Sikh is a religion. which they have made it into a religion. Originally, it is known as Chala Dharma. It is according to Vedic point of view, it is Chala Dharma. Chala Dharma means for a particular purpose, an acharya has a right to create a dharma. That is known as Chala Dharma. So the Sikhism is Chala Dharma. Chala means to cheat. So it is not cheating dharma. To cheat the miscreants, you create a special army. That is how it started. So originally, they have their roots in the Vedas. Originally. But later on, they just made Dhanavya a separate religion. And they have not written any philosophical book. There is no logic. Just the Guru Granth Sahib, worship it. And read Guru Granth. And in the Guru Granth Sahib, they chant the name of Ram. Hari comes so many times. Ram comes so many times. And now, when they see that we are not Hindus, means when we are not Vedic, and Vedic people, they worship some form, so we are impersonal. They just started saying something, we are impersonal. But if they are being impersonal, why do you say Satanam Akal Murat? Akal Murat, Murat means form. Oh Lord, you have form. Your name is Sat, your name is eternal. Satna means what? Eternal name. And all the names and forms in this world are temporary. Only your name and form is eternal. That's what they are saying in their prayer. But they don't know. They don't. Satnam Vaheguru. Satnam Vaheguru. Satnam means what? Eternal name. Your name is eternal. Yeah, yeah. So Satnam is what? Your name is eternal. What is your name?
Hari.
Hari is your name. So chant Hari name. Chant the name of Hari. So your name is eternal. So you chant the name. Saying, sir, your name is eternal. Your name is eternal. Your name is eternal. Your name is eternal. Hare, God is thinking, tell my name, bhai. My name is Hari. So chant Hari. And one thing they have retained right from Guru Nanak's time. That is the Sandhya Arati. Very beautifully they sing. It is full of names of Krishna. Evening time you should go and see that Arati. Lot of devotees, especially Punjabis are very emotional people. When they do devotion, you think there is no pure devotee than him. Because very emotional. Because devotion is actually emotion, isn't it? And their emotions are very bubbling up. And they just get into the whole thing and say, oh, Hari, and then there is this thing. And they show our emotions. So that really you should see that scene. I just waited to see that scene. It is very wonderful. Only thing is they don't understand.
What was the need of, instead of worshipping a deity, worshipping
a God? Because then if you worship deity and Krishna you have, you are a Hindu, na? So the whole point is they wanted to, this is actually not even by this is not their mistake. It is the British who did this divide and rule. I am getting into sociology and history. Here in this land, though there is so much of history which talks about Muslims did that, these people did that, these people did that. This history is written by the British. So they wanted to create differences. It's they who created the differences between ye Hindu hai, ye Muslim hai, ye hai, ye. Now, somehow Gandhi got corrupted with this idea. And he started talking about Hindu, Muslim, Isai and all these things. He started. Before the Christians came, the British came, even though they were Muslims, and the Hindus and all, they were living together like brothers. The splat was created by them in the same way. Sikh also, it's created
the
by
Muslims
them.
Muslims were from 2000 years ago. This Saudi Arabia, they were worshipping Shivas.
What? Anyhow, whole world, it was there. So I don't think we should continue with the discussion now. So it's a long discussion. Indian sociology and history. Now, at last, we finished six systems of philosophy. Yeah. Guru Nanak was worshipping Hari. Har Mandir. He built Har Mandir. Later, Mandir came later. But he was worshipping Hari. So before we go to Tattva Sutras, Tattva Sutras is nothing but the Vedanta presented for easily understandable purposes. That is the purpose of Tattva Sutras. And that is the only purpose of Tattva Sutras. Vedanta Sutras have three sections in them. That is, one is known as what is our philosophy? Number two is refutation of our other philosophies. Number three, support from the scriptures. Now, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he has made this three into three books. Refutation of other philosophies, which is known as Paramata Khandana. He wrote a book called Tattva Viveka. I took some extracts from Tattva Viveka and gave it to you in some pages. If you remember, for Buddhism I gave, and for Yoga I gave, and then for Karma Mimamsa also I gave. And Swamata Sthapana section of the Vedanta Sutras are presented in another book called Tattva Sutras. And support from scriptures, which are there to support the stand of our philosophy. It is presented in one book called Amnya Sutras. Amnya. Amnya means Vedas. Amnya Sutras. So in this way we have three books written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So that Vedanta made easy. Vedanta Sutras made easy in these sutras. So, Tattva Sutras, that is what is the subject of discussion. As Srimad Bhagavatam says, there are 10 subjects in Bhagavatam. These 10 subjects expand into these 50 sutras. So, it is like this. Now, you have a book. In the book, you have, in the index, you have chapters, isn't it? First chapter, second chapter, third chapter, like that. First chapter is Sarga. First topic is Sarga, Visarga, Sthanam, Poshana, like that. But, what is the index? This is a overview index. But the full index is, within that, what is there? Within that, what is there? So in this way, book is generally written. Each chapter has got sections. In this way, Bhaktivinoda Thakur presented this Vedanta Sutra as an elaborate index for Srimad Bhagavatam. When Mataji told me that you are going to teach Bhakti Vaibhava students, then according to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's syllabus of these courses, he planned, he gave instructions to his disciples, saying that you should teach Bhakti Sutra and Tattva Sandarbhas before teaching Bhagavatam. Before teaching Bhagavatam, you have to read the Tattva Sandarbha. Tattva Sandarbha, there are two parts. One is known as Pramana Kanda, other is known as Prameya Kanda in the Tattva Sandarbhas. So you will come to know in the Tattva Sandarbhas, in the Pramana Kanda, that how Bhagavatam is the book of Pramana for us. And in the Pramana Kanda, at the end, Srila Jiva Goswami says that henceforth, when I quote a Bhagavatam verse, it is not to support something, but it is to say something. It is not to support something else. It is to conclude and say something. So, once we read the Pramana Kanda, It's for sure. There is nothing more than Bhagavatam. Kimva parair Ishvara sadhyo. What else you require? No other book is required other than Bhagavatam for Ishvara sadhya. For self-realization, there is no other book required for you. That is the conclusion which you get by studying the Tattva Sandarbha's first part. And then, in the Prameya Khandas of the second part of Tattva Sandarbha, there is a very elaborate understanding of the 10 subject matters of Srimad Bhagavatam. According to the realization of Sudha Goswami, according to the realization of Sukadeva Goswami. 10 subject matters spoken by both. Sudha Goswami's verse is Satta Sargo Sargasya Sthanam. At the end, again the same things are spoken by Sukadeva Goswami. So in this way, the 10 subject matters, if you want to know what they are and how they are, you go through the Tattva Sandarbha second part. Now after Tattva Sandarbha, you know Bhagavatam, like all know it like this. And then Tattva Sutras have to be studied. Because Bhagavatam is a natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur has presented Vedanta Sutra in the form of Tattva Sutras. In other words, Srimad Bhagavatam is a commentary on Tattva Sutras. So if you are reading Bhagavatam, you should know it is a commentary on which? It's commentary on what? Commentary on Vedanta. But Vedanta is too complicated. You just know, understood. No? Just we did three verses we did. Three sutras we did. You know, how they go. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, for the sake of Gaudiya Vaishnavas. This Gaudiya Vaishnava means sweet. Sweets. Madhurya. Madhura. And Vedanta sutras are a little bit kadak. They're not very sweet. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur put this Gaudiya Vaishnava flavor on the Vedanta Sutras and made these Tattva Sutras. The Gaudiya Vaishnava flavor to it. And we have been doing Vedanta Sutras, Vedanta, studying Vedanta so much for the past few days. You know what is already there in Tattva Sutra. You already know it. But I am doing it just to show a overview, upasamhara. In any class or in any writing, there is something called upasamhara. Upasamhara means you summarize everything what you have said before, what you have read before, what you have written before, at the end again. It's the format of giving a class also. Whenever you give a class somewhere, after the entire class, at the end you just make a brief, what you are told in the class. So this Tattva Sutra is like this. For this particular session of 7 days, what we are doing. So we'll do our best possible. So you have that book, paper, Tattva Sutras paper. You see. First, you can distribute. First, we'll do the first chapter as much as possible. Yesterday I gave, no, yesterday it was distributed to everyone. First Sutra.
Om Eka Paro Nanyaha Om. Ekha paro nanyaha.
The Supreme is one and there is no rival. There is only one Supreme.
Ekha paraha.
Ekha means one. Paraha means Supreme. Like these sutras, you find that there is something called Dashamul by written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Dashamul. So this Dashamula is a kind of what are the things you should know from the Vedas. That is the Prameyas of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas is these 10. Objects to be known. That you have in the Nyaya Vaisheshika 12 objects to be known. Like that in the Dashamul is nothing but the objects to be known. What are the objects to be known? Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentioned 10. But these 10 basically have their basis in the 9 Prameyas written by Madhvacharya. Bhaktivinoda added one more to make it Gaudiya. If you remove that one, Prema Bhakti, it is Madhva. The difference between Madhva and Gaudiya is this thing, in one sense. We just put Prema Bhakti, then it's Gaudiya. Prema Bhakti you don't find. Shravanam, Kirtanam, chanting and dancing for the pleasure of Krishna and experiencing the love of God, that manifested by Madhavendra Puri. So Shripad Madhvacharya, based on his teachings, Vadirada Tirtha, he wrote these nine pramayas. So we say Madhva Praha. So whether Vadirada says, Madhvacharya says, Madhvacharya's teachings. So these nine pramayas are written by Madhvacharya. Now based on these nine pramayas, Baladeva Vidyabhushan Prabhu wrote one book called Prameya Ratnavali. Baladeva Vidyabhushan Prabhu wrote one book, Prameya Ratnavali. And he just changed the order of these nine prameyas to make it Gaudiya. To suit our rasa. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he added one and made it Dashamul. So we should know this background. Now we are into Tattva Sutras. My experience says that I read Bhagavatam, only three cantos, without reading these Tattva Sutras. It was not really, I was not really get an idea what Bhagavatam is. Completely, of course, you can never get it. It's unlimited. But after reading these Tattva Sutras, only once I have read, that's all. Then Bhagavatam made some sense for me. Since Bhakti Vaibhava people, they study, devotees, they study Bhagavatam, I thought it should be one of the important things they should know. That's the reason it just came to my mind. So that's why longing says, Saddarsans, this is there in your topic. Eko paro nanyaha. Eka, there is only one person. In the scripture, Ekameva Dvitiyam Brahma, the same thing, Eko Paro Nanyaha. Eko Paro Nanyaha, there is no other person. There is no secondary person to him. Now, here someone may protest. Somebody may say, if it were so that there is only one Supreme God and no other God, then that one God would have to perform by himself many things. Because we say, oh, Bhagwan is sab kuch karte hai. This is a general saying people have. God is the cause of this wind, God is the cause of fire, God is doing this. Without God, even the patta, leaves also cannot do. So then there may arise a question. God is alone. So he is alone doing everything. Then, himself, all the duties involved in creating, maintaining and destroying the universe, he should have to perform them without any help from anyone else. God is alone. Then it is answered, this question, this objection is answered next verse. Agunopi sarva shaktirame yatvat. Agunopi sarva shaktirame. If somebody raises the question, if God is alone, then he will do the creation, he will do the maintenance, he will do the discussion, like Prabhupada very always talks about this. Krishna is God, but he is not like the atlas holding like this. He doesn't have to do that. Have you ever seen this atlas? old man trying to do something. He lives the God and still smiles. Because Srila Vishnu Thakur explains, Ranta Shakti, unlimited potencies are there. They do the work and Krishna is smiling. That's how it is. So you see, now you should realize that how, when yesterday we discussed this point, if you don't understand Shakti Parinama, it is very difficult to be a Vaishnava. This point Prabhupada writes in the purport, if you have read. That is the first point mentioned in the Tattva Sutras. If you don't see everything as energy of Krishna, very difficult to be Vaishnava. Then you think of Maya, I'm not Maya, this Maya, and you yourself are Maya. Vaishnava renunciation is very happy renunciation. It's very happy renunciation. That is why the renounced order of Vaishnavas, they are always blissful. And renounced order of Mayavadis, they are very tensed up. A kind of Mayavadi principle, the Vaishnava, a renounced order of sannyasi, he should not laugh. But Prabhupada was always laughing. And he used to make everybody laugh. You hear his conversation specifically. The whole room was always laughing. And sometimes in that laugh, you don't understand what Prabhupada is speaking also. So this is one important thing. So that is the reason, is because they see something as Maya. If you see something, Maya is not anywhere, it's in my consciousness, then if you get rid of this thing, then nothing, no problem. Agunopi sarva shaktiramayatvat. Agunopi, even though he is beyond the material modes, he is paraha. Last verse it says, paraha. Eko paro. Para means transcendental. Though he is transcendental and there is only one person in the spiritual world, ame vasame vagre, in the beginning he was only one, api sarva shaktir, he has got unlimited potencies, all the shaktis, unlimited potencies he has got. And these shaktis are ameyatvat, ameya. Ameya means, the real meaning of ameya is immeasurable. Like in the Bhagavad Gita, the words Duryodhana says to the Dronacharya, he says, what does he say? Aparyaptam tadasmakam phalam bibam bhishma virakshitam paryaptam dimitesham. And ameya, where does it come in Bhagavad Gita? Anyway, where it is. Ameya means immeasurable. Aprameya. Aprameya. Yeah, Vishnu Sastram, sorry. Aprameyo, Rishi, Kesho, like that it goes. Aprameya. Ameya means meya, you cannot measure. Ameya. You know, Vanmali Prabhu's disciple is there. Ameya. I told Vanmali Prabhu, Prabhuji, his name is not Amaya, it is Ameya. Still he calls Amaya. And many, there is one boy, youth boy, he of course got married and is preaching nicely. His name is Ameya. And nobody pronounces his name properly. Somebody says Amaya. It is not Amaya, it is Ameya. Ameya. Huh? Ameya Nimaya. Ameya. Ameya means immeasurable. So, but he is, because he is limitless, he has all potencies. Even though he remains beyond the touch of the modes of material nature. So he has potencies. This sutra means that Supreme Personality of Godhead is beyond the modes of nature and he has all powers. This is so because he is limitless. Which is to say that he cannot be measured or understood by direct perception of the material senses or by any material means. This is described in the following words from the Shetashvara Upanishad. Parasya shaktir vividhaiva shruyate. Remember this verse, very important. Swabhaviki jnana valakriya chahi. Prabhupada quotes this verse in the Bhagavad Gita also, in the third chapter. He says, natasya karyam karanam cha vidyate natat samasya bhidhikascha drishyate. Parasa shaktir vividhaiva shruyate swabhaviki jnana valakriya cha. Hope good that you are not in Mira Road. Otherwise, next class you can come only when you memorize this sloka. That is the rule. When I used to take Bhakti Shastri, 50 people joined, 10 people left. Then I chat again. I will not take. Let others take. So his potencies are multifarious and thus his deeds are automatically performed as a natural sequence. So, swabhaviki, the word swabhaviki is used. Naturally happening, automatically happening. Of course, we accept everything is happening automatically, but under the directions of the Supreme Lord. So automation doesn't mean there is no controller behind it. Like people talk about everything is happening automatically. True, it seems to be automatic. It seems to be. Like go to a in a ship, you have an engine room, automatic. It's not as unmanned engine room, UMS, unmanned ship. Everything is automatically happening. But still, you require a chief engineer, you require everybody there so to control, to monitor, see everything is going on nicely or not. Now, somebody may protest. You consider the Supreme Lord, both beyond the modes of nature and the master of all potencies. How is it possible to ascribe these two mutually contradictory natures of the Lord? You say the Lord is transcendental and he still is the master of potencies. How it can happen? Transcendental means Nirguna and Nirvishesha. That is what the scriptures say. Nirguna, Nirvishesha. He should not have anything. Nothing should be secondary to him. Advayam. That is the description in the Veda. Then, very important verse, which is directly talking about the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. Om viruddha samanyam tasminna chitram. Om viruddha samanyam tasmin na chitram. This time I gave a class on Damodarashtakam. When I spoke on Damodarashtakam in the Kartik month, I gave a class in Mira Road. So instead of saying I'll give a class on Damodarashtakam, I wrote this thing on the board. Then somebody asked Prabhuji, Prabhuji, ye kind of shloka kahan se aaya? Where did this one line shloka come from? I told this Tattva Sutra is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Because in that commentary on that particular pastime of Krishna being bound by Yashoda, Srila Vishnu Thakur brings about eight contradictory things which are harmonized. He says Krishna is hungry, whereas he is aptakama. Aptakama means self-satisfied. He's still he's hungry. And he is shantakaram ujagashayinam badvanabham shureshan. Shantakaram, he is the personification of peace. And he was angry. And another contradiction is he is a master of dharma, righteousness. He is absolute truth. Now he is speaking lies. And now he possesses everything, but he is still stealing. These contradictions are brought about by Srila Vishwanatha Thakur in his commentary. And he is unlimited, but still he is bound. Nobody can catch him, but Yashoda caught him. These are contradictions, isn't it? So, God means in whom two mutually contradictory things can coexist. Two mutually contradictory things can coexist. That is why he is God. If something cannot exist in him, then why is he called? How he can be called God? Oh God, no, he should not tell lies. How can God tell lies? Why he cannot tell lies? What is your problem? He told Duryodhana to tell lies. What is your problem? He can tell anything. Whatever it is, why? What is your problem? He can tell lies. God cannot tell lies. Very difficult to digest, isn't it? Very difficult for people to digest. Why? This is Gaudiya philosophy. We don't say, oh, God is a very good person. Why? He should not be a bad person. He can be anything. He can be anything. He can be a lumpat. That's what the Gopi says. Yatha adata vidhat lumpato. Even though you are a lumpat. Many of the Westerners cannot understand this. Lumpat is a very bad word in Hindi. Every day we talk. When your child becomes too mischievous, you say lumpat. That's what we say in Hindi, in North India, that's what I say. Hey, lampate. Means like And morning you are glorifying Krishna with this word, Lampat. What kind of glory is this? Every day. This is Shastakam. So, how can you calling Krishna as Lampat be glory? People cannot understand this thing. This is glory. It is his glory.
Why the absolute truth tell lie?
That is their question. Because he is absolute truth, he can tell lie. You put the same thing again like this. Because he is absolute, you can tell lie. And because you are not absolute, your truth also doesn't have value. Today morning I had idlis for my breakfast. So what? Is it truth? So though it's truth, what has got to do with you? Isn't it? So that's God. That is this comes from this philosophy of Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes. And when these sutras were given to one scholar in Sanskrit, then he told who wrote these things. He was not knowing who wrote. Then the scholar in Sanskrit from the Madras University, he told, then we told this was written by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur about 100 years back, 150 years back. He was a district magistrate, working as a magistrate under the British government in Bengal. He was shocked. He told, this work can only be done by somebody who is at the time of Vyasa. And nobody who is less intelligent than Vyasa can do this work. This work of Tattva Sutras. That was his realization. This is what we are doing. This work. And that is the realization of the scholars. Scholars can identify what is being presented here. Just imagine, Vyasa condensed the entire Veda, Upanishads into Vedanta Sutras, and condensing that Vedanta Sutras in 50. And without compromise, without going here and there, and exactly presenting. Condensation of condensation. It requires, in English we have something called pressy writing, you know that? You have? How many of you know about pressy writing? Pressy writing. Pressy writing means you have a long comprehension paragraph. You have to express in minimum number of words. And that got the highest marks. If you have given an English paper, you have got the highest number of marks. Because the intelligence and the grammatical strength, vocabulary is tested in pressy writing. Not much in, okay, you read the para and then write, not in grammar. The practical application of grammar and your vocabulary is tested in pressy writing. How precisely you can present. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadasa Goswami mentioned this thing. Eloquence means mitam cha saram, he says. Mitam cha saram. Expressing truth in minimum number of words. Expressing the truth, the essence of the truth in minimum number of words is known as eloquence. Mitam chasaram. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And he was glorifying Bhaktivinoda Thakur like anything. He says, this work cannot be done by anybody whose intelligence is less than Vyasa's. He's a scholar, so he's presenting in this language. That is why Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is the Vyasa for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, modern Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Vyasa incarnate. 5 chapters, each one 10 sutras. 50 sutras. 555 made into 50. One tenth. So, Viruddha Samanyam Taskinna Chitram. So Krishna can be, he gives everything and he steals everything. He spoke the absolute truth in Bhagavad Gita and he told Yudhishthira to tell Ashwatthama. So contradictory things can mutually coexist in him. No, and then the way he presented is viruddha samanyam tasmin. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says nachitram. It is not very astonishing. Nachitram means it's not very astonishing. Of course, the translation goes like this: nobody should be surprised. Surprise is also a good word. That the Supreme Lord mutually possesses mutually contradictory natures. If you have some contradictory nature and a condition, so we find it to pagal iskaru parosa nahi kar sakte. You cannot trust him, isn't it? That's why it is. You cannot trust a person who's got contradictory natures. But absolute truth is by nature having contradictory natures. And there is no astonishment about it. Nachitram. Next. Now, to quote some verses. Tandupanishas apani padau jvano grihita pratyaksha chakshus shrunoti akarnaha. He says, akshakshu. He says, apani padau. He doesn't have hands and legs. But still, jivano grihitva. He walks and he accepts. Without hands, he accepts. Without legs, he walks. Pashyanti. Chakshushaha. Without eyes, he sees. And akarnaha. He doesn't have ears. But still he
hears.
This is contradictory. Although the Supreme Lord is described as having no hands, legs, he's nothing like accepts sacrificial things and moves very quickly. He has no material eyes, yet he sees everything. He has no material ears, yet he hears everything. Here someone may ask, somebody asks, how can one understand the truth if the Supreme Lord has many mutually contradictory natures? How can you understand him then? It is very difficult to understand who has got dual personality. Isn't it? It is true. Because he has got contradictory natures, it is difficult to understand Krishna. Now they say, how to understand him? If he has got dual personality, you don't know what he is going to do at any time. Now, this question is answered. Sa om sa satchitanando jagadmayo bhaktir vishayatvat jnanagamyo bhaktir vishayatvat. Sa satchitanando jnanagamyo bhaktir vishayatvat. Now, it is explained like this. How can you understand then? You can understand only by bhakti. He is Satchitananda. He is eternal and full of knowledge and bliss. He cannot be known by ordinary knowledge. Jnana plus agamya. Jnana agamyo. Jnana means knowledge. Agamya means you cannot understand him. You cannot reach him. You cannot know him. Bhaktir vishayatvat. He is the object of devotion. Only by devotion you can know him. Because if you apply your intelligence and by your jnana, you can understand. Only by bhakti. So by bhakti, what happens? Krishna reveals himself. The Supreme Personality of God, it is eternal and full of knowledge. He cannot be known by material mind and described in material words. He is only by devotional service. The Shruti Shastras declare, yet vachana vyauditam yam mano na manute. The material mind cannot understand the Supreme Lord. Material words cannot describe him. Srimad Bhagavatam clearly says, very famous, all devotees know this. Bhaktyaham ekaya grahya. Only by bhakti he can be understood. I am understood only by devotion. Here someone will protest. Somebody may say, Arere, what is this you are saying? If this is so, and the Supreme Lord is attained by devotion, so the Supreme Lord must be a resident of material world, because devotion means sentiments. Devotion means love, affection, emotion. These are all material. This is what we find in this world. That is the problem. What is the problem in this world? Emotions are the problem. I get emotional with somebody and love somebody and then I get into the whole business. Emotions are the problem. Devotion means emotion. So then the Supreme Lord must be one of the materialistic person. here in this world? Then answer is
Sacha Satya Nityona Jinananto Deshakala Parichedat.
No, the Supreme Lord is
Sacha Satya, he is the real truth. Nityo is eternal, Anadi is without beginning, Ananta, unlimited, Deshakala Parichedat, he is beyond the limits of time and space. Deshakala Parichedat. He is eternal supreme truth, beginningless and endless, for he exists beyond the limits of time and space and time. The Shruti Shastras, it is said, Satyam Jnanam Anandam Brahma, the Supreme Lord is eternally knowledge and bliss.
No. Though he is an object of our emotion, but he is beyond transcendental. That shows emotions of the world are material, but emotions towards him are not material. And why? Point is, he is Satchitananda. Ananda is only because of emotion. We find in this world, Ananda is because of emotions. Even though you have so much of money, but until unless you have some emotion to share with someone, the money don't have value. So it is emotion actually gives bliss. The Supreme Lord being transcendental, the emotion towards him is transcendental. That is why devotion is the way by which you can know him. Now, the Supreme Lord is beyond the material world, as you say. Somebody may object. Why does he create the material universe in the first place? Okay, now I accept that Krishna, the Supreme Lord, is transcendental. We are supposed to love him, emotion towards him. And then why did he create this world? Then everything about the world comes. Then why does he create the material universe in the first place?
Paropichit jadabhyam vilasi vishwasiddhe.
Now he says, Paropi, though he is transcendental, chit jadabhyam. Chit means conscious living beings, that is the souls. Jadabhyam, jada means material world, matter.
Vilasi vishwasiddhe.
Vilasi, playfully,
vishwasiddhe,
he creates this world. So he creates this world as a part of his vilasa. Vilasa means pastime. The Supreme Lord's pastimes in one way can be divided into three kinds. Leela, three kinds of leelas. The Chinmay Leela, number one, which he does it in the spiritual world. That is known as Chinmay Leela. The other one is known as the Srishti Leela. This world, Srishti, is also a Leela. It is all is also his Leela. Srishti is also Leela. Ramanuja explains this. The Srishti is also Leela. Next, the third one is Kripa Leela. That which does in Bhauma Vrindavan, where we are staying. Krishna playing his Balram in Ramandreti. And going around banks of Yamuna, doing Kalya, Daman, all these things. This is Kripa Leela. Kripa Leela means he comes to this world out of great compassion and then he. Like he says, Sa Akshatha. He saw, like the Upanishad says, he glanced. E Goham Bhushya Prajayate Prajayaya. Prajayaya means he was one, he wanted to have many. So Upanishads talk about it. Says that how this one Supreme Lord, he saw, this is a seeing of Krishna as Leela, and he wanting to become many, that's also Leela. Now, going further, in the next sutra, the author refutes the idea that the transcendental potency is different from the Lord himself. Somebody may say, oh, is it so? That he creates the world, that means the Lord is potency or what? Then he should be just one potency only. He is the Lord Satchitananda
Or is the Lord having Satchitananda? Is Krishna Satchitananda? Is Krishna having Satchitananda? Though we say Satchitananda Vigraha, what does it mean? Embodiment of? So, the Mayavadis, this is what they say. The Vaishnavas say, no, Krishna has Sat, Chit and Ananda as his qualities. Krishna has these things as his qualities, as his potencies. That is why Sat, Chit and Ananda are the potencies of Krishna. Krishna is absolute truth. Since he has them as potencies, we can say the potencies are non-different from him. When we talk about the non-different aspect of potency and possessor thereof, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes in Brahma Samhita, the potency and possessor thereof, this is the word which you use, Advaitam, and explaining that word, the potency and the possessor thereof, they are Advaitam. When you talk about the non-different aspect of it, your answer is true. But that doesn't mean that Krishna is Sat, Krishna is Ananda, Krishna and is Chit. No. That is where Ramanuja, he wrote the first description or the Vedanta explanation of this Satchitananda. When he was still a student under, what was it? Yadav Prakasha. When he was still a student of Yadav Prakasha, when his this thing became very popular, when his note on this Ananda, what is that Vedic statement? Just now I told previous one also. Satyam Gyanavantam Anantam Brahma. On this, the Mayavadis say that Brahman is Satchit Ananda. But Vaishnava say, Satyam Jnanam Anantam Anandam Brahma. Brahman, or the God, has Sat Chit and Ananda as qualities. Vishesha. There is qualities of Krishna. Sat Chit Ananda is not just Sat Chit and Ananda. Who is possessing them? Krishna possesses them. Krishna is the possessor of the energies. So when we talk about the non-different... Yeah, Satchitananda Vigraha. Like for example, like I say, Damodarashtra Prabhu is a personification of music. He's made up of music or what? He plays an harmonium, sings nicely, but he is a person who possesses music as a quality, isn't it? Because he possesses music as quality so much, so wonderfully to the highest level, that we say you are the personification of music. Like, Krishna Kripa Shri Murti, Abhay Charana Aravinda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada is the embodiment of Krishna's mercy. It is that Krishna's mercy, taking a body and you take some mercy from him. He's made up of mercy. No, he's a person. He possesses Krishna's mercy to such an extent that he can distribute to the entire world and make a house where the whole world can stay and then enjoy the Krishna's mercy or take advantage of Krishna's mercy. You're getting what I'm saying? I hope I'm through. Isn't it? You hope that? Oh, the Mayavadis say Krishna is not a person. God is not a person. He is Satchitananda. But Vaishnava say he is a person who possesses these as qualities. You're getting? Yes.
Similarly, we can also understand the Nam and Nami
oneness. Yes. Okay. There is no difference between Krishna and Krishna's name. That doesn't mean just Krishna is there. That Krishna name is dancing with Radharani. Krishna is a person.
He
is the possessor of that Naam. That is why we say Nama Prabhu. Naam becomes a personification of... Okay, are you getting the point? Yes, next we'll go further.
No, somebody may say, Supreme Personality of Godhead thought. No. Next chance, the author refutes the idea that the transcendental potency is different from the Lord. Now, Om Tat Chaktita Chaktitas Tattvadikyam Iti Chena Tattavedat Abhedat. If someone claims the Lord is different from his potency, then I reply, no, it is not so, for they are not different. Now that non-different aspect has been spoken here. If someone claims the Supreme Personality or the Creator of the world is different from his potencies, then this sutra is spoken to refute him, because the Supreme Personality of God is non-different from his potencies, from his many potencies. The potencies are non-different from him. This is described in the following words of the Nyaya Shastras. Shakti, Shakti, Matayor, Abhedaha. The Supreme Personality of God, the Master of Potencies, is non-different from the potencies. Shvetashvara Upanishad says, Swabhaviki Jnana Bala Kriyacha. The Lord's potencies are knowledge, power and action. His own feature. They are not different from him. Like our philosophy, in one sense, it is said, Shakti, Shaktiman, Bheda, Abheda, Prakash. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu talks about it in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Shakti, Shaktiman, Bheda, Abheda, Prakash. If you just see Abheda, then it doesn't work. And if you see Bheda, then also Bheda, Abheda. Both are there. So Ramanuja was the first person to talk about it. Otherwise, it is only Abheda, just Shakti. Now, the example is given. Ekata esha chittasyagner jyotsna vistarini yatha parasya brahmana shaktis tadedam akhilam jagat. Very beautiful verse from Vishnu Purana. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quotes in Sanatana Goswami's discussion. Ekata esha chittasyagner jyotsna vistarini yatha. At one place Agni is there. Agni fire is at one place. And from fire, Vistariniyata, its energies are spreading. Vistariniyata. In the same way, Parasya Brahmana Shakti, in the same way, Parasya Brahmana, Parasya, Supreme Lord's Brahmana Shakti, his effulgence is Tadedam Akilam Jagat. In this way, whole world it is spreading. Just as the illumination of a fire, which is situated in one place, spread all over. The energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Parabrahman, are spread all over the universe. Very nice verse to memorize. There's one more verse similar. Ekada desha sita syagne vistarini sarvato yatha aishwaryadrupam ekam cha suryavad bhaudiyate. Aishwaryadrupam ekam cha. Krishna has got one rupa, aishwari rupa. Aishwaryadrupam ekam cha. But still, his energies are present everywhere, like the sun. The sun is at one place. It's here, you go 10 kilometers away, still it is there. It's like that. Sun is at one place, it is spreading its energies everywhere. Like Prabhupada talks about the sun and the sunshine. The sunshine is coming from the sun, so it's not different from the sun. At the same time, you cannot say the sunshine is the sun. In the same way, Satchitananda and all other things are Krishna's potencies. So in one sense they are coming from Krishna, so they are Krishna. In one sense they are possessed by Krishna, so they are not Krishna. Now, here someone may protest. It is not so that by creating the material worlds and performing other activities, the Supreme Lord, Personality of God becomes attached to that activity. Like, you know, we do some activity, becomes attached. And his nature becomes different from what he was before. You know, activity is for the conditioned souls. Why Krishna has to do some activity? He becomes something different. What before? Does he not become enamored of what he has created? Is he get attached to something? This is what we observe in this world. Now, I do something and people, you go and tell people, I did this, Prabhu. And Krishna would also do the same thing. You become somewhat, you have to do something.
This doing something is for conditioned souls. Why he has to do? That why he has to do is comes less later. Now, kartapyapikara svatantriyat, because he is svatantra, independent. Though he does, he is akarta. Kartapi, even though he is a doer, he is not doer. Bhagavad Gita and Bhakti Shastri must have learned this thing. Soul, God, world, doer, non-doer, how they are all doers and non-doers. Here the protester declares, whoever creates the material world must certainly become affected by the passionate attachment, hatred and other like emotions. To this protest, the reply is that because he is supremely independent. See, in this world we do something and get attached because we are dependent. And Krishna is totally independent, svatantriya. Because of his total independence, even though he does, he has got nothing to. He is totally detached, unattached. That is why Bhagavatam says, Janmadhyasyato anvayaditaratah artesh vigne swarat. In that line, swarat is very important. If you remove swarat, then, alright, he creates, he maintains, destroys, and he knows, that means he is like me only. But that swarat, independence, makes him, even though he does, he is not dependent on the thing which he has done. Swatantriyat means swarat. He is not dependent. Affected by the material passion, Svetasura Upanishad is explained, Nishkalam, Nishkriyam, Shantam, Nirvadyam, Niranjanam. The Supreme Personality of God is perfect and complete. He is peaceful and flawless. He is never affected by the material energies. His actions are never material. In the next sutra, the author reveals the Supreme Lord does not increase when he creates the universe. Neither he becomes less when he destroys the universe. Sa dika rupa purnatvat. Sa dika rupa purnatvat. Sa not sada. It's actually sada aika. There's something wrong here. Sad, on top of it, there should be a dash. Sadaika rupatvat. Sada means always. Ekarupatvat. Ekarupaha purnatvat. Always he's having ekarupa. Ekarupa means here, it doesn't mean just he's only one form, no other form. Ravana, Narasimha, not his forms. It means he doesn't diminish by his creation, neither he increase by his destruction. In the Isha Upanishad, it says, Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachate. Okay, now the Supreme Lord is perfect and complete. Why he has to create? What motivates him to create this world? Most important sutra. No. That question was, same, the subject is same in the past three shlokas. Why he creates? What is the motivation? If he is Purna, he is complete. Suppose you are satisfied, will you eat? A tendency to do something is because you feel something lacking in me. Why you have to go to work? I feel I don't have money. I have to work. So in this world, the observation is, somebody does because he feels incompleteness. Now, if Supreme Lord is complete, then why he does this creation? That is the question. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has pointed out so perfectly. This point, even other sampradayas don't speak as clearly as we speak. This point. Karunyam tat kriyahetur nanyadatta kamatvat. Apta kamatvat. Apta kamatvat means he is apta kama. We have many devotees' names as Atma Kamdas.
Aptakama means completely satisfied because because of his desires, and all his desires are attained automatically. See, for us, if you have a desire, then you have to plan how to fulfill the desire and then execute it, and then it may happen, may not happen. Isn't it? But for higher bodies like Brahma and all, the moment they have a desire, they just have to think how to satisfy. That itself is enough, they'll be satisfied. Brahma thinks and the world is created. Because Brahma's body is made up of mind. Just by his thinking, the universe is made. He doesn't have to go and take the hammer and the spanner and then do fix up things. He doesn't have to do that. So Brahma, just by thinking, that we, after doing also, it may not happen. But at the higher bodies, just by, like for example, in heavenly planets, if you are thirsty, if I am thirsty here, then I have to take this and then drink, isn't it? In the heavenly planets, they just have to look at it. Just by looking, their thirst is quenched. Looking at the water, isn't it? For Brahma, he doesn't have to look also. He just had to think. But for Krishna, he just had to desire. That is why the Upanishads, they say, Satya Sankalpa Satya Kama. These are the words used for Krishna. Satya Sankalpa means, as soon as he takes a Sankalpa, that I want to do, it is done. Here we have to take a Sankalpa, I have to do, and then think, and then do. For Krishna, as soon as you take a Sankalpa, everybody knows what a Sankalpa is? Yeah, wow, Sankalpa. I want to do. That is called Sankalpa. I will do. That is called Sankalpa. Satyakama. Why is called Satyakama? As soon as the desire manifests in him, immediately the desire is fulfilled. That is Krishna. So that is why it's called Apta Kamatva. But still, what makes Krishna create this world? What is the motivation now? Now, Karunyam Tat Kriya Hetur. Yes. The reason is what? Karunyam. His extreme compassion for the living entities. That moves the heart of Krishna to create this world. Compassion is the motive. Many people say, why God created this world? You know, he just made this world and make me suffer. Mm-hmm. My dear sir, Krishna made this world out of great compassion to you. Do you think the suffering is compassion? The problem is not Krishna in your suffering. The problem is you myself, you yourself. Out of great compassion, a father sends the child to the school. But the child is thinking what? Why mama, father has sent to this school? It's like horrible place. I don't want to go to school. Isn't it? So the stupid child is thinking the father, he cannot recognize the compassion of the father. The father has sent the child to the school for the child's betterment. And taking the other way around, the government creates a jail for the betterment of the thief. Because he can get a place where he can try to enjoy. This world is a place where the conditioned soul who wanted to enjoy independently of Krishna, they can enjoy. And at the same time, if they understand, they can get out of the world and come back to Krishna. World is a facility created by Krishna to go back home, back to Godhead. It is compassion, it is the mercy of Krishna. We should see this world in this vision. It's actually mercy of Krishna. Prabhupada says, Tava Icha, because of your desire, you created this world and then we are all here. And because of your desire only, everybody will be delivered. In his song, when he went to America and the Boston, he writes, oh Prabhu, because of your Icha only, we are all bound. Because of your Icha only, we will be delivered. So it is compassion. Karunyam tat kriya hetur nanidatta kamatvat. Compassion is the motive of the Supreme Lord's actions. He has no other motive.
For his every desire is at once fulfilled without any effort on his part. However, the conditioned soul act in a different way. They are busily engaged in various activities to attain their desires. What is Paul? In Shruti it is said, Atmanah kamaya sarvam priyam bhavati. The conditioned soul acts to fulfill their material desires. Satya kama, satya sankalpa. The Supreme Personality of God has no need to fulfill his desires, for every wish is at once fulfilled without his having to act. In the Taittiriya Upanishad 3.6.1 is said, Anandadeva kal idamani bhutani jayante, anandena jatani jivanti, anandam prayanta visham vishanti. The Supreme Personality of God is bliss. From his bliss, all living entities are born. Because of his bliss, they attain, remain alive. Departing from his world, they attain him, the supreme bliss. So, first chapter is over. I don't know how many chapters we're going to get through in the evening. We got an hour and a half, 3:30 to 5 o'clock. So, Vedanta in a nutshell, by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Tattva Sutras, we stop here. Hare Krishna, meet at 3:30.